Father, we do thank you for your work in Wendy's life, bringing her, turning her back to you in 2014. Thank you for her enthusiasm and the way she seeks to do her work for your service and in your sight, and to serve her colleagues who she works alongside. And we ask that you'll continue to provide her with opportunities to share her hope with people who don't believe and encourage other Christians in her office. Father, we thank you for the work that you've given us to do, and we ask that you'll open our minds to your scriptures now, that we might understand more fully your plan and live in the light of it. Amen. So yesterday at prayer team, I had what's not a rare conversation. So a guy who's in his 20s has just got back from Zimbabwe and Zambia and South Africa. And he'd been to the third world before, but again had just been confronted by the absolute poverty that he saw, particularly in Zimbabwe. And coming back to Australia, I think he's got a bit of reverse culture shock that happens when you go to Africa. But it's not the first time that he's been thinking these thoughts. And at prayer team yesterday, he was saying, basically what I do is I bring oil and gas, hydrocarbons, out of the ground. And should I be doing something else? Or how do I find motivation in this day-to-day? And I guess he's a guy who's thinking about his future and different things that he could be doing overseas or here in Australia. And he was sharing this in a group of six guys who most of them aren't asking that question. Their options are a bit more fixed. They're older, they've got mortgages, kids. But they would ask that same question. What's the point of my secular work? I'm basically just helping other people to bring hydrocarbons out of the ground. And I don't know if you've ever asked yourself, am I just shifting deck chairs on the Titanic? If this ship is going down, is my secular work just a matter of moving the deck chairs around? Which is an exercise? Is that an exercise in futility? That was the question that Reese was asking himself yesterday, and I think all of the group was feeling his pain. Today we're looking at the final in our series on Thank God It's Monday, or A Brief History of Work from the Beginning to the End. And I've called today's talk Thank God It's Sunday, because we're looking forward to the end of the story where God will do a new work, not just of redeeming creation, but raising it, resurrecting it. And so I want us to do some thinking about the future. And I've got three things in particular that I want to point out from the Bible, that Jesus, the future is physical. Jesus' resurrection was physical. Our resurrection will be physical. And the creation itself, the new creation, will be physical. So three passages before we return to this question, am I just shifting deck chairs on the Titanic? The first one is Jesus' resurrection. While they were still talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." They were startled and frightened, thinking they saw a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you troubled, and why do doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It's I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost doesn't have flesh and blood, as you see." When he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. And while they still did not believe because of joy and amazement, he asked them, "Do you have anything to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish. He took it and ate it in their presence. So pretty clearly in this passage, Jesus' resurrection is physical. The disciples took some convincing. Their first reaction was, it's worse than we thought. Not only has he been crucified, he's now a ghost. And he has to give them three proofs. First of all, touch me and see. If you don't believe, touch me. I'm not a ghost. I'm substantial, solid. Do you have anything to eat? You know, it's been 4 days since I last ate. Give me some, what have you got for me to eat? And then he gets to show off his scars, which is always a cool exercise. I've got a scar just here that I got hit by my surfboard and knocked out. But if I'm ever, if you ever need to identify Paul's body, this scar here will help you. And it's the same with Jesus. He still has the scars. There's a continuity in his body between his body that he was born into and the body that he was resurrected in. Like we saw in the first talk, Jesus still being human, still being physical, means that he's qualified for this job that God created humanity for. He made man in his image so that they would inherit the world or would rule over the world. And Jesus is the man, the physical man still, who is qualified to rule over this world. And he's the start of a new humanity, which is where we come in. So this is the second point, that our resurrection will be physical as well. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 says these words, "But someone will ask, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body will they come? How foolish! What you sow doesn't come to life unless it dies. When you sow, you do not plant the body that will be, but just a seed, perhaps of wheat or of something else. But God gives it a body as he has determined, and to each kind of seed he gives its own body. Not all flesh is the same. People have one kind of flesh, animals have another, birds another, and fish another. There are also heavenly bodies, and there are earthly bodies. But the splendor of the heavenly bodies is one kind, and the splendor of the earthly bodies is another. The sun has one kind of splendor, the moon has another, and the stars another, and stars differ from star in splendor. So it will be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that is sown is perishable, it is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It's sown a natural body, it's raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. So it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being, the last Adam, a life-giving spirit." Now, it's spiritual not in the sense of immaterial. It's spiritual in the sense that it's fit for the new creation, where God himself will be. And we see this particularly in that last sentence there, with the example of Jesus. The first man, Adam, became a living being, the last Adam, a life-giving spirit. So Jesus is a life-giving spirit, but we've just seen that he's still physical, he's not immaterial. And that's the future for our bodies as well. They'll be spiritual in that they'll be prepared or suitable for the new creation, but there'll be continuity between our bodies now and our bodies when they'll be raised. Just like a seed is sown, this is Paul's example, just like a seed is sown in the ground, there's continuity between the seed and the tree that grows. You might not be able to predict what the tree will look like from the seed. Here's an example of a jacaranda seed. There's three of them down the bottom here. There's the seed pod. And I've got a jacaranda in my backyard, so I'm a particular fan of these ones. But looking at that seed, you would not necessarily be able to guess what a jacaranda tree would look like. This is not my jacaranda tree, but this is what my jacaranda tree I hope will look like one day. It's glorious, and there's a lot that you wouldn't predict, but there is a continuity between the seed itself. The substance of the seed is what becomes the substance of the tree, although there's a difference in form. The form of the seed doesn't show you necessarily what the form of the tree will be. So the future for our bodies is hard to imagine from looking at me at the moment, how glorious I will be one day, but there is some continuity that's there. And I guess the hope here is that it's not all downhill from here for me. I'm turning 40 this year and I'm expecting that the injuries will come, the groaning will increase over the years as I groan for a new body, a new home. But there is still hope that it's not just going to get worse and worse, that the physical world, my body included, has a glorious future. We will be qualified to rule with Jesus as part of the humanity that God intended to care for his creation. But this is the question, what will we rule? And this is the key question for Reese as he considers, what's the point of my work? What will we rule in our physical bodies? Well, Romans 8 tells us the future of creation. I consider our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. So the whole creation was cursed after mankind's sin. The ground itself was cursed because of Adam and his choice. And the ground itself, the whole creation, is groaning in anticipation, like I groan in anticipation of my new body. The creation itself is looking forward to us, the children of God, being revealed. And sometimes I've got two cats, and sometimes I look at my cats and he looks back at me and I wonder what he's thinking. And I wonder whether sometimes he's thinking, come on, Paul, get on with it. I'm groaning here. I'm waiting for the children of God to be revealed. I'm waiting for you to be raised and the rest of the creation to be raised with you. And as we look around at the universe, it's a big place. In the Milky Way, there's about 100 billion stars. And then as we look beyond that to the observable universes, it looks like there's about 100 billion galaxies, which is an exciting prospect for the future of creation. Just imagine if, with resurrected bodies, perfected, immortal, we were to live in a universe like this, where there's not just Earth to colonize and care for, but 100 billion stars in 100 billion galaxies that we perhaps would be taken care of with Jesus. But I heard Tim Keller talk on this topic a couple of years ago, and he said when we're looking into the future, as we look at the seed of the jacaranda tree and speculate about what the jacaranda might look like, we're flying blind at this point, aren't we? All we know is that there was continuity in the form of Jesus' body, the substance of Jesus' body, but a difference in the form. And there's continuity in the substance of our bodies, that's our hope, but there's distance in the form. And the creation itself has a future, it's groaning as it waits for its liberation, but we don't exactly know what the future will look like. We're like looking at this seed of 10,000 billion stars and trying to speculate what the greater, more glorious thing will look like. But what we do see clearly from each of these three points is that the future is physical. C.S. Lewis put it this way: there's no use trying to be more spiritual than God. God never meant man to be a purely spiritual creature. He likes matter. He invented it. The future is physical, and we express this hope in our physical activities today. I think the physical hope that the resurrection and the Bible holds out for us gives us two things, at least. That it's okay to enjoy God's creation today. They're part of God's plan. We don't need to be spiritual and try to run away from God's good gifts. We receive them as an expression of his grace, his love for us, his generous character. But at the same time, the physical hope for the future also tells us that it's okay to miss out on things. They might be good, but there's going to be later. I might not been to Africa this year and seen its great beauty alongside its great distress, but that's okay. There's a physical future. It's not like I'm going to miss out. One day I'll get to see the resurrected Africa in all of its glory. Well, having seen these three things, that Jesus' resurrection was physical, our resurrections will be physical, and the creation itself has a physical future, then I want us to come back to this question of shifting deck chairs on the Titanic. And I want us, on the example of the Titanic, to note that there's two options for the Titanic. So at the moment it's resting on the bottom of the ocean. We've found where, but it's still there. The ship has gone down. And Clive Palmer, of course, has plans to rebuild it. So he's not going to resurrect the Titanic. He's going to reconstruct it from different material. Here's a model. That's as far as he's got so far. It's not looking very hopeful. Whereas there was a movie made a few years ago, which was a bit of a bomb at the box office, called Raising the Titanic. And here is one of the people, I think it might have actually been the director, who is dragging his multi-million dollar model of the Titanic behind him. That's the other option for the Titanic, that it could actually be raised from the bottom of the sea. And I want to suggest that that would make a difference. If you were on the Titanic and you knew that it was going down, but you knew that it had a future, that it would be raised from the bottom of the ocean, then some things might make sense while you were on there. If as people were rushing for the lifeboats and the boat was threatening to break up, you were a steward on the Titanic and you were carefully packing the deck chairs away, people might ask, what on earth are you doing that for? This ship is going down. And you could explain, oh no, but I know that it's going to be discovered in the future. And I know that they're going to raise it up. And I know that the chairs will be of great interest and perhaps have some greater purpose. Then you wouldn't be entirely crazy shifting deck chairs on the Titanic. Or if carefully you packed your binoculars away from your lookout position at the top of the tower and just put them back in their spot so that a future generation could find them for perhaps working out whether they actually had binoculars up in the crow's nest, then you wouldn't be entirely insane to do that. You might not know exactly whether these deck chairs will be of significance in the future or whether it would be important to put those binoculars back into their stowage up in the crow's nest, but you would think that caring for this ship was worthwhile, even though you knew that it was going down. God's told us that the future is physical and that material work is an expression of this hope. It's a good world that we live in, a world with a future, and so we work in it expecting that one day God will bring it to perfection. And so we might live like passengers on the Titanic, skeptical of our own self-confidence, not boasting that we think that we can create heaven on earth and create the unsinkable luxury liner. We might live optimistic that God has a plan, that even when this ship goes down, Jesus is able to resurrect it. And we might be careful in the way that we care for this ship while we're on it, because we think that it really does have a future, that one day it will be resurrected and restored, one day that it will be resurrected and radically renovated, made into something much more than it ever was before. And we might be warning the other passengers on this ship of the impending danger. And most of all, we'll be grateful that the captain of this ship gave up his seat on the lifeboat so that we could have a future ourselves.